Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we have Kristen Hawkins to help talk about the latest with Roe versus Wade. And John Gibbs, a great candidate in Western Michigan, who is running to unseat Peter Meyer. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Come to our Student Action Summit at tpusa.com/SAS. That is tpusa.com/SAS. At the Student Action Summit, you will hear from 5,000 conservative activists, top conservative personalities. It's a celebration of youth and freedom and so much more. Turning Point Action will also be hosting President Donald Trump and Governor Ron DeSantis, Kayleigh McEnany, Ted Cruz, Laura Ingraham, Josh Hawley, Greg Gutfeld, and more. tpusa.com/SAS. I love hearing from you. Email me freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. I'm going to tell you a story. Growing up in Chicago, love visiting. I'll actually be there in about a week and a half, speaking in Wisconsin to a great organization there. I remember being in Chicago a couple summers ago, and Turning Point Action was starting a series of Super Saturdays. Turning Point Action did a series of door-knocking campaigns across America, organized by the great Tyler Boyer and the whole Turning Point Action team, separate from the educational ventures of Turning Point USA. So I remember I was in Chicago and I drove to Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's not an easy drive for those of you that have done it throughout the night, because the next morning we were starting our door knocking for a certain candidate in Western Michigan. I got up very early and rallied the troops and told everybody that in Western Michigan, we need to put our forces together to go get a certain person elected by the name of Peter Meyer. Now, mind you, I don't know why we endorsed Peter Meyer, largely because I thought it was a flip district or something like that, a way to kind of gain ground. But what an incredible disappointment and letdown Peter Meyer in Western Michigan has become. He has become a camera-seeking, attention-grabbing, self-righteous congressman who voted for the impeachment of Donald Trump as like one of the first things he did right out of the gate. He sprints to try to go on cable television at every single corner imaginable. And he's someone I have very little respect for, and he's got to go, and he's got to go right now. And there is a great candidate running against Peter Meyer, who, by the way, some of you might not live in Michigan, some of you might not have even been to Michigan. Some of you say, well, I don't really care that much about Michigan. Well, you should. Michigan's a great place. But I will say this, you should care about getting these impeachment voters out of line and better candidates in place. And the man running against him is John Gibbs, who's terrific from Western Michigan. He joins us right now. John, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Charlie, thanks for having me on. It's great to be able to spend some time with you today.
Likewise. Tell us why you're running and tell us what is your message against the snake Peter Meyer?
Peter Meyer betrayed everyone in our district. Days after being a congressman, literally days in there, his first vote he takes is to impeach Trump. People put in their sweat and their tears and their money to Peter Meyer's campaign, helping him win, just as you guys did, Charlie. And he was saying all the right things. People thought he was a real deal. When he got in there, just a few days after, he really backstabbed everyone. So he is not providing leadership. He is not representing the people that voted for him. And so I felt that I needed to do it. I wasn't planning to. After serving our time in the Trump administration, I was maybe going to work for a think tank and be out of the spotlight for a while. But some of our friends from our former White House said, dude, Peter Meyer voted to impeach Trump. You should go back home and run against him. So I decided to pray about it, think about it, get my ducks in a row. Jumped in head first, got President Trump's endorsement, got Dr. Ben Carson's endorsement, who I worked under in the Trump administration, and said, yeah, we really need to do this. We really need to provide leadership for the good people here in West Michigan, which are not getting it right now under Peter Meyer.
When is the primary? I think, is it August? Is that right? Or
yes, it's August 2nd. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have a fair amount of time ahead. So you ran the Office of Personnel Management. You were the director of Office of Personnel Management. You were also on the 17-6 Commission to fight critical race theory. So you understand the stakes. You're loyal to the country and loyal to President Trump's agenda. Can you explain to me, though, what is it about Peter Meyer? Because it's so frustrating, because I feel as if we're fighting the left, but if our own side doesn't even want to fight the left and instead wants to go be pals with them at cocktail parties, then what are we doing here? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a great point, Charlie. I was not actually OPM director. I was nominated to be OPM director by President Trump. However, the great Mitt Romney, was on my committee, and he blocked my nomination, so I was nominated for that.
That's crazy. So sorry, continue.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that speaks to your point, though, about these rhinos out there. They have this sense of elitism, a huge sense of elitism, pride, arrogance. They don't need to listen to the people that elected them. They don't need to listen to the pulse of where our great patriots are around the country. No, they instead are serving a globalist agenda, a very arrogant agenda, where they believe that they are a step above everyone else and they have all the right answers, regardless of what anyone else says or what anyone else wants. So there are some in D.C. like that. During my time in the administration, I went toe-to-toe against them. I always told people that before I served in the Trump administration, I never swore. But once I started working in our administration, going up against these rhinos, they will just trigger you and pull out this anger in you because of how they're trying to block the Trump agenda. They're trying to block what regular people around America want and voted for. And they will just sit there and try to block everything as though there's some kind of Democrat. So it is a big problem. There's a certain type like that out there. And Peter Meyer is exactly that. He doesn't come off very well. He comes off as very arrogant and elitist, even when you see him speak. It is just something to observe. So people see through it. They're sick of it and really want change.
Yeah. And so tell us, you know, going to Congress, it, you know, changes a lot of different people. And, you know, there's this narrative from the left that America is this, you know, terribly systemic racist country. And, you know, you're fighting it. You fight against CRT and speaking out against it. What will be your message in Congress to push back against that?
Well, when it comes to CRT, my message is very simple. It's a total betrayal of the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement and just basic common sense and Americanism, period, says judge a person by their character, judge a person by the results they produce, how they treat others, by who they are and how they act, not judge them by race. Well, CRT is so evil and so insidious because it does the exact opposite of that. It says judge a person by their race. So if you're white, you're guilty automatically. If you're black, you're a victim automatically. If I had been raised like that, I wouldn't be where I am today. My parents raised me to shoot for the stars, no barriers at all. Get in there, work hard, and go for it. That is a real American mentality, no matter what background a person comes from. But CRT threatens to derail that. It threatens to pit people against each other, create division, and really take us to a dark place that we don't want to go. So I will stand up and say that in front of anyone. They can try to call me a racist or a white supremacist if they want to. People have done that. I think it's quite comical, and I consider it a badge of honor to be attacked by actual racists trying to call me these names. So it's hilarious. Let them keep doing what they want to, but we have to stand up for what's right. And what is right is that everybody gets treated based on your character, not based on your race. And CRT takes us in the absolutely wrong direction on that.
So in closing here, how is the race going? Meyer has a ton of name ID, comes from some very wealthy connected families, if I'm not mistaken. How's the race trending?
Every poll I've seen shows that we're up by double digits. So that's very good news. There's a poll out there done by those favorable to Meyer that I hear at least shows that it's apparently tied, but we know that that's probably juiced up a bit. So the results are much better for us. So that's good news. We are killing him on door knocking. He is having such a hard time getting people to go out and knock doors for him because he's so unpopular. Whenever he shows his face in public, he almost gets tarred and feathered. It's quite a sight to see. Whereas we have people out there knocking hundreds of doors every weekend. We still are recruiting more. But we're knocking tons of doors. And when we knock doors, you see about 1 to 2 out of 100 that are for Peter Meyer, just 1 to 2%. The remaining folks, about half are with me, and the other half haven't heard of me yet. But once we tell them about me, they're very excited. So we're beating them on that. We're beating them on yard signs. Whenever we talk to people, they say, I see your signs everywhere. And so we're continuing to aggressively get those out and get our name ID up. Meyer just started putting us out a very short while ago, and he doesn't have that many out there. He's going to try to buy up all the ads and send out all the mailers, but it's not working. Instead of getting his name out there more, because he's already got name ID, it's only reminding people of how much they don't like him when they get his stuff. So I think I'm guardedly optimistic. It looks very good for us as long as we keep working hard, hitting the ground every day. We're going to visit every single city and township in our new district, no exceptions. Meyer's not doing that. He's in New York City or D.C. or in his huge house talking with his rhino friends on the phone, I guess, but we're out there with the people every day. We're knocking doors every week. So we like the momentum we're seeing. We like where we're at right now. And we got to keep up the momentum to make sure we preserve that lead going into August 2nd and we win big here.
VoteJohnGibbs.com, not mistaken, right? That's the website?
That is correct, yes.
We are behind you. Please take out that snake, Peter Meyer. He is the worst. He lied to all of us. He presented us he was some sort of conservative, and he's just been terrible. God bless you. John Gibbs, running for U.S. Congress to change the Republican Party for the better. VoteJohnGibbs.com. Thank you so much, John. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? Producer Andrew's right here doing an Ironman thanks to Relief Factor. And truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older. That can do it, getting older, which is why I'm so impressed with the people at ReliefFactor.com. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. They recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back pain, neck pain, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted, only $19.95. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now, ReliefFactor.com. You should order the three-week quick start too, discounted only $19.95. See if it will work for you. I think it possibly could. Give your body what it needs to heal itself. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now. I want to play a piece of tape here. It's very telling, and it's something that if you send your kid to college, they will be taught this nonsense. So there is some sort of a NATO summit. There's all these associations. I can't keep them straight. It's a total mess. It looks like Russia, there's no way to defeat Russia. We don't know where the $56 billion went. Joe Biden is sending another $800 million. We were against aid from the beginning. They should have held transparent elections in the eastern part of Ukraine before any invasion happened and asked the people of eastern Ukraine, do you want to be part of Ukraine or part of Russia, and allow self-determination and sovereignty to happen. That would have been the peaceful thing to do. Instead, tens of thousands of people are being killed. Millions of people are being displaced for war games by a neoconservative war industrial complex that is getting fabulously wealth and rich while we can't even secure our own borders. The whole thing in Ukraine is a catastrophe. The true victims are the people of Ukraine that have to now live in an active war zone because of the pride and the arrogance of Western forces. It's ridiculous. However, so kind of around this issue of Putin, Boris Johnson, and can I just say, Boris Johnson, I think, has been probably one of the great disappointments of the last couple of years. And that's quite a statement, because there's been some winners. I mean, there's been some real beauties of people that have really let us down. Boris Johnson, who came in under with the nationalist energy that Nigel Farage started. Nigel Farage, great man, coming into power, and has been anything but the bold and courageous leader. It's just hard to find a Churchill, isn't it? Boris Johnson, I think, always saw himself as becoming a Churchill. I want to ask this question. Listen to this quote from Boris Johnson. Could you imagine Churchill saying something like this? Play cut 121.
You need more women in positions of power. If Putin was a woman, which he obviously isn't, but if he were, I really don't think he would have embarked on a crazy macho war of invasion and violence in the way that he has. If you want a perfect example of toxic masculinity, it's what he's doing in Ukraine.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the fact that he's sociopathic or wants to conquer lands, but it's the fact that he's masculine. Now, I don't have to go through like a world history lesson, but let me tell you about this one example. How about the Byzantine Empress Irene of Athens? You ever heard of her? She gouged out her son's eyes just to retain power. How about Mary I, who viciously persecuted Protestants, burning some 300 at the stake? Was that toxic masculinity when she did that? How about Eva Peron or Elizabeth I of England? How about Cleopatra, who served her enemies' heads on a platter to her visitors as they came in to the mouth of the Nile? How about Empress Wu Zaitan of China, who is willing to eliminate anyone to stay in power, even her own family? Or how about Mary, Queen of the Scots, where we get that drink, that name of the drink that many of you enjoy this summer, literally called her Bloody Mary? Toxic masculinity is what Boris Johnson says. Look, as Candace Owens said at our Young Women's Leadership Summit, men largely built the Western world, but women raised it. Not allowed to say that. So I'm just quoting Candace Owens. If you got a problem, you can ask her. She's having a kid right now. Boris Johnson goes out of his way not to talk about the morals or the values, but to indict men. Now, what I think is hilarious about this whole thing is that Boris Johnson says this. I thought we can't define what a woman is. Is it a, so let me get this straight. If Vladimir Putin was a birthing person,
if Vladimir Putin was a birthing person, he never would have invaded Eastern Ukraine.
And by the way, what is the whole aesthetic of Boris Johnson? He always looks like he's just got off a treadmill. It's a mess. It's constantly with the hair and it's the permanent disheveled look. Maybe it's appealing. Could you imagine Winston Churchill saying, if Adolf Hitler was a woman, he never would have invaded the British Isle? Maybe Churchill did say something like that. I doubt it. Yeah, you know what we need more of, actually? Boris Johnson, the opposite. We need more strong men that stand against evil. What you call toxic masculinity that's missing is strong men that don't protect the weak. But you wouldn't know that, Boris Johnson. So with us right now is a pro-life warrior who she actually has one of the best campus videos on the life issue I've seen in quite some time. So much so, I reposted on my Instagram of this young lady that, can we get that clip actually to play at some, let's get that up while we have Kristen here. Kristen Hawkins, phenomenal pro-life warrior. I saw you right there in front of the Supreme Court as the decision came down. Wonderful Students for Life. Kristen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Charlie. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. Congratulations. It's been many years of work for you and so many others. Just first, your initial reaction, Roe versus Wade being overturned.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost indescribable to talk about this moment that we've been working for 50 years, to see the court admit that it was wrong, egregiously wrong, in 1973 and disregarding the science of human life and when it begins. But to know that this decision, immediately after this decision came down, states started to act to ban abortions, shutting down abortion facilities. Within one day, we knew of over 400 children that had been spared the violent death of abortion. And this is really a turning point for our entire culture and our entire country. And I think, you know, really, as you saw with President Biden's remarks the day of the decision, the start of the 2022 midterm election season.
So can you give us kind of a state by state update? It's hard to track all of this. There's legal briefs being filed, Florida, there's injunctions. Just kind of give us state by state to the best of your ability of what's happening.
Sure. We published a map of Students for Life Action to kind of keep folks on board. We've helped pass laws, Life at Conception Acts, to make abortion illegal in states as soon as this decision came down. So immediately we knew of about 13 states that had a pre-existing 1973 ban on abortions or had since passed a ban on all abortions in their state, where the attorney general then in that state would go and say, okay, these laws have now taken effect. States like Texas, states like Louisiana, and heartbeat law in Ohio had just passed stopping abortions when children's heartbeat can be detected. Immediately, Ohio said that law goes into effect. And so we've seen this kind of sweep, Arkansas, Alabama. I mean, I can keep going on. Oklahoma as well. Now, the days since, you know, now it's Thursday, nearly a week from the decision, the abortion lobby is grasping at straws to issue injunctions and lawsuits against the states from enforcing these laws. There's been a lawsuit filed in Texas. There's been a suit filed in Louisiana. These laws have no legal standing at all. But what they're trying to do is buy themselves time so they can continue committing as many abortions as possible.
So basically it's a state by state issue. So there was a Florida judge, though, that blocked a 15 or 18 week ban. And so under what justification is the judge now blocking that?
Yeah, they use different rules. Like the Louisiana case, it is some very interesting legal maneuvering. Like they're not, because before they always would say, Roe said women have the right, so therefore the state can impede upon women's rights. Now they're basically saying, well, this person in the state doesn't have the right to pass this law or to enforce this law. These are very nuanced. And like I said, they're support realist lawsuits. Like they are, I've already spoken with the Louisiana Right to Life folks that were like, look, they were the first state to have a lawsuit filed. These suits are not going to hold weight. What they're doing is what the abortion lobby has always done, which is to get judicial activists to enforce their will, and you basically usurp the will of the people. This is what they have been doing for decades. I was astounded Friday night after the decision came down to see MSNBC and CNN talk about the judges, Justice Thomas of all people being judicial activists, when really that is how the abortion lobby has gotten their entire agenda passed through states. Because every single time a state legislature in the past 30 years has attempted to pass a law to protect women and children from these predatory abortionists, they always immediately go to one judge that they've identified who's either, been a recipient of campaign funds or whose wife is on the board of a local Planned Parenthood. And that's how all of these laws get stopped. So I don't think any of these are going to hold up. It's just going to be a long time coming and fighting in the courts. And they're hoping that it gives them enough time to see a Democrat attorney general elected to the state who will then say, I refuse to do my job and uphold the laws of the state. Because, I mean, that's, in fact, what we've seen happen with district attorneys. This is why we have, for example, the Texas heartbeat law that went into effect this September. It wasn't a criminal punishment. It's a civil punishment. It takes, there's no, authorities involved in this law. It just says, if you know somebody who's committing abortions on children whose hearts are beating, you as an individual and citizen can sue them. And that was the reason for why the state of Texas authored the law that way, because district attorneys in Houston and Dallas and the biggest cities in Texas said, hey, if you pass an abortion law, we're going to refuse to do our job and not enforce it.
And so what's been really interesting to me is how corporate America has responded to this. They're now basically going to try to create abortion tourism, which just shows that our work is still ahead of us. Our work is not done, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, talk about New Mexico, which is the late term abortion capital of America. It was just in Albuquerque. They brag about it. And so can you talk a little bit about this new industry that it's always existed, but it's going to get worse, of abortion tourism?
Yeah, the abortion trafficking, I mean, this is what they're going to be doing. They're going to say, oh, you live in the state of Texas, come over to New Mexico.
That's right.
And you can kill your child here. This is trafficking. This is wrong. And this is why our fight in the pro-life movement doesn't stop here. Reversing Roe, sending the decision back to the states. We believe there'll be about 26 states in the coming weeks and months that will move to mostly restrict all abortions. But that leaves over half the country where, their governors can be saying, come to our state and we'll pay for you to end the life of your child. This is why we have to continue to make the case to the American people and to women in crisis that no woman stands alone. The pro-life movement has always been standing beside her, with more than 3,000 pregnancy centers, more than 400 maternity homes. We vastly outnumber the number of abortion facilities. You don't have to make this false choice between your life, your education, your career, and the life of your child. Don't fall for the regressive views of the left. Listen to what you've said your whole life and been taught your whole life, that you are a woman who is capable of more and is able to choose both. That is why we have to continue to make that case. When you're talking about the abortion trafficking, Charlie, something that a lot of folks aren't kind of fully up to speed on yet is the proliferation of chemical abortion drugs. The fact that the day our FDA stopped, they halted the distribution of Johnson & Johnson vaccines because one person had tragically died from the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccines, the exact same day our FDA came out and said that they were going to get rid of all of the REMS, the risk evaluation mitigation strategies on chemical abortion pills. Even though we don't have a national abortion reporting law, because every time we try to pass one, Planned Parenthood abortion lobby sues. Even though we don't have one, we know of over 24 women who've died from this drug. We know that abortion-related ER visits have skyrocketed 500% in California. You can go to any pregnancy chat room online, not a pro-life chat room, a pregnancy chat room and hear the horror stories about chemical abortion. You can go to Yelp and read the reviews of abortion clinics across the country. Read these horror stories, and it's unbelievable. And this is how they're trying to basically usurp the states.
The entire pharmaceutical industrial complex is involved in a lot of these socially liberal issues. Let's kind of reinforce this point, right? So vaccine mandates, but also the transgender issue with chemical castration and puberty blockers. And yes, the abortifacients and a lot of these interventions that can be used to stop pregnancy, that could be used to prevent pregnancy or end pregnancy, I should say, not just prevent pregnancy. So there is a profit motive behind a lot of this. I'd be really interested to see how much money Planned Parenthood receives from the pharmaceutical companies. That'd be very interesting. We know the pharmaceutical companies pump a lot of money into the human equality fight, which is the equal rights campaign, which is the Alphabet Mafia's nonprofit. We know that because Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, I know Pfizer in particular, they have hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of profit to stand. So when you hear about socially liberal issues, remember, there very well might be a profit motive behind that.
Yeah, I mean, these are companies that stand to gain millions of dollars. Yes. And they've already indicated that they are increasing production of drugs because they're working with the Biden administration, hoping that President Biden makes these drugs over the counter. That whole mantra of safe, legal, and rare, the abortion industry has been using for decades, no longer applies. It's certainly not safe. They don't want it to be rare. And now it's not legal, and they're going to say they're doing it anyway.
It's great commentary. Kristen, thank you for coming on as always. We didn't get that clip of you coming on campus. We're going to put it on charliekirk.com. It's brilliant. Keep up the great work. Thank you. God bless you.
Thanks for all that you do.
Thank you. Okay, we have not talked about the Ukraine conflict in quite some time. And I'll be honest, one of the reasons it's so murky, even when I have experts on this program, I'll call the experts an hour or two later and I say, you understand what you said on my show doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Who's winning? Where are they winning? How many casualties? They say, well, we don't know. I said, well, then honestly, it's not worth the time. So murky. It's so cloudy. So before we go any further, let's just be very clear. A strong country invading a weak country just for territorial gains is immoral, and we do not support that. Putin is in the moral wrong for doing that. However, a commander-in-chief of the United States very well could have prevented this invasion totally and categorically. The solution is very simple. We should have allowed for elections, fair and free elections, unlike some of the ones we have in our country, to be conducted primarily in the eastern part of Ukraine. And if the eastern part of Ukraine wanted to break away from the Zelensky government, we should have given them the opportunity to do that. I thought democracy dies in darkness. You see, our own government that's always lecturing us about democracy, even though we're a constitutional republic, why didn't they allow democratic means for Eastern Russia, Eastern Ukraine to go to Russia if they want to? You see, this is a part that people don't really want to talk about, which is the eastern parts of Ukraine, a vast majority of them actually want to be part of Russia. Many of them speak the Russian language. Many of them don't like the Zelensky government. They've been very upset about the exploitation by the Zelensky government. Now, the reason this has not happened earlier is because of mass Western intervention, funding of NATO, and a total clouding of the conflict. And no one wants to say the obvious thing out loud. In fact, our leaders are too busy sending $56 billion to Ukraine, something they never should have done. We should have always been trying to broker peace, end the war, and restore constitutional self-government representation. Now, some of you say, well, if Eastern Ukraine wants to be part of Putin, we shouldn't let them. That's not for you to decide. I'm no fan of Vladimir Putin. If Eastern Ukraine wants to live under Putin's totalitarianism, why is that the concern of the United States while we're being invaded? We have hyperinflation. We can't pay for gas. Stop playing war games in somebody else's backyard. It does not end well. Ukraine has collapsed, according to Colonel Douglas McGregor, and no one wants to admit it. Our Western leaders have spent $56 billion. They go and visit with Zelensky in Ukraine. And what do they have to show for it? Play cut 132.
Support for the non-existent Ukrainian state, because let's face it, Ukraine is now a failed state. It's collapsed. People are being pushed at gunpoint into Russian fire. This whole thing is a disaster. But no one wants to admit failure, because they know once they admit failure, they lose all credibility. Well, of course, obviously, we could have paid attention to what Mr. Putin was saying and had been saying for literally a decade. I mean, this goes back to 2008 in Budapest and the Munich Security Conference, where he effectively said, we cannot accept what you're doing. We will not tolerate the presence of NATO forces, particularly U.S. forces on our.
I hate to say it, but our early commentary that received a lot of backlash from a lot of people, unfortunately, is being proven right. I wish we would have been wrong. I wish Ukraine could have won this war easily. Now people say, well, Ukraine can still win. 6 years ago, John Mershmeyer, a Wendell Harrison Distinguished Service Professor at Political Science at University of Chicago, said the West is leading Ukraine down the primrose path, and the end result is Ukraine is going to get wrecked. We subsidized them for years, and we led them to a place where they're going to get destroyed. Play cut 133.
But I actually think that what's going on here is that the West is leading Ukraine down the primrose path, and the end result is that Ukraine is going to get wrecked. And I believe that the policy that I'm advocating, which is neutralizing Ukraine and then building it up economically and getting it out of the competition between Russia on one side and NATO on the other side, is the best thing that could happen to the Ukrainians. What we're doing is encouraging the Ukrainians to play tough with the Russians. We're encouraging the Ukrainians to think that they will ultimately become part of the West, because we will ultimately defeat Putin and we will ultimately get our way. Time is on our side.
I stand with the Ukrainian people. I think every decent person does. But the thing that would have been in the best interest of the Ukrainian people is preventing war by allowing democratic elections in the eastern part of the country, working with Zelensky, which is nothing more than a client state of the Central Intelligence Agency, and preventing this mass refugee crisis and the suffering that's happened. Instead, we send more arms, which means more people die. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.